Prudence showed it to Imani and whispered,
"This looks like a cock-a-doo-doo."
Tamra leaned forward to see around Amira to Kelly.
"You were there?"
"Yeah. I saw what was happening and I pulled out my phone."
"Wait a second, you're kidding."
Peter sat back in his chair. In his left arm, Catherine started to wake up.
"I remember you now."
Rachel snorted and said,
"Whoops."
"Sorry, yeah," Kelly said to Peter. "I didn't expect you to remember me. You definitely had other things to worry about."
"You had your phone up," Peter remembered,
"and you were recording."
"There's a video?"
Tamra asked. She looked to Alix with a face that said, "I knew it."
"Well, yes, but that's Amira's property now. Sorry."
Kelly half laughed. "This isn't exactly Thanksgiving conversation. I probably should have said we met on Tinder or something. I'm sorry." This time he apologized to Amira. Alix stared across the table at her sitter, feeling as if she'd been very publicly uninvited to a gathering that she herself had organized. The betrayal Alix felt. "Why wouldn't you just tell me where you really met? Why would you say the train?" was quickly replaced by a new backstabbing confusion. "Why did you call Peter that night? Why wouldn't you just call me?"
Amira adjusted her earring and picked her fork up again.
"No, it's fine. We did meet for real on the train a few days later, though," she promised. "And then we just kept seeing each other."
"Well, Jesus, Kelly. I'm glad you're here," Peter said.
"And I'm glad that something good came out of that night. Amira, you're a saint for not suing that entire franchise, which you could definitely do if there's a video."
Walter raised his glass to himself.
"Abso-friggin-lutely."
"Oh, yeah, no." Amira shook her head. "No, I would die if that video got out. I haven't even watched it."
"I'd be the same way," Jody said.
"But, Amira pivoted. "How did you guys meet, Mrs. Chamberlain? I guess I've never asked."
"You mean," Peter said, "how did Alix pursue me at the most disgusting bar I've ever been to?"
Alix forced a laugh.
"Pursue is generous."
"Mama," Briar said, "I want to open the pie."
Alix shushed her. "Pie is for later." Peter went on to tell a story that Alix had heard many times, but never really annoyed her until now. The whole evening, she found herself falling in and out of love with her husband quite abruptly, and through his account of how they met, she was both pleased that he depicted Alix as stunning, waving and buying him a beer from across a bar, and irked that he mentioned her being so nervous that she drank the beer herself. With Kelly sitting so close to her, Alix continued to switch from offense to defense. When Peter finished his story, she thought, "That's right, Kelly. I drink beer now, with my husband, who I've had sex with more than one time."
Tamra looked to Alix and asked, "Is that when you were working at Hunter?"
"Yes, it was," Alix nodded. She wanted to say something about the obnoxious dollar drink specials this bar had provided and how appreciated these specials were because she was making less than 40 grand at the time. But Kelly seemingly took her tiny pause as an opportunity to ask, rather loudly,
"And what do you do now, Alix? Amir said you're writing a history book. Is that right?"
Rachel said,
"A history book?"
As Peter said, "Now that's being generous." Amira's eyes went small as she looked up at Alix. Alix's face and neck turned hot against the sweater she now wished she had changed out of. She waved her head side to side and took up her glass of wine.
"Bri, sit up, my love," she said.
"Well, it's, she took a sip.
"It's my little history. On my, she placed a hand to her chest, and it reminded her of hugging Amira the morning after Market Depot, and how Amira just sort of leaned in as if she'd had trouble hearing, instead of just hugging her back. I have a book coming out with HarperCollins, and it'll have the best letters I've written and received since I started my business.
That's really only half of it.
Tamra turned to Amira as she went on.
I'm sure you've seen her Instagram and all the things she has her hands in.
Oh, no, Amira smiled. I don't have Instagram.
Girl, Tamra feigned dramatic shock. We have got to get you caught up.
You don't have Instagram? Next to Alix, Jody's amazement was more genuine.
That's amazing. Even Prudence has one.
Amira said,
really?
Well, I run it, and it's private, Jody assured her. But it keeps our distant family members very happy.
So it's like a history of your business?
Kelly wouldn't let it go. Alix knew exactly what he was doing. But how could she fight him at the dinner table in front of her friends and in front of Amira?
Mm-hmm,
she said.
Exactly.
And when did it start?
Well, I started my business in 2009, so...
Oh, wow, okay.
Kelly smiled across the table.
That's a brief history.
Wait, when did we all meet? Jody stepped in. 2011?
Rachel, I can't believe you were the experienced parent back then, Tamra said.
Taught you bitches everything I know, Rachel said.
Imani and Cleo looked at their mother, seeking corroboration that a bad word had been said. Tamra shook her head in confirmation and put a finger to her lips.
You know what? Peter said. I want to make a toast.
Alix thought both, oh, Jesus, and thank God. Peter was so good at making things easy and sociable, but only in a way that made it seem like a TV show was ending. With all 141 pounds of her being, Alix wished she could just turn this night off.
I know it wasn't easy for Alix to leave you, ladies, Peter said. And believe it or not, I miss you all very much, too.
As Alix writes her book and her business continues to grow, I've seen how much she's come to lean on you, how much you encourage her, and how much easier you make her life. And Amira, that includes you now, too. I'm very happy, or should I say thankful, to be outnumbered by so many amazing women tonight. So, here's to you. Everyone raised their glasses and said cheers. Briar managed to get a green bean on her fork by herself. When she held it up and showed it to Walter, he said, "That's tremendous."
16.
After Peter made a toast that made Amira so embarrassed she could barely speak, Peter handed Catherine over to Mrs. Chamberlain, and the table broke off into smaller conversations. Walter asked Kelly what the heck net neutrality was anyway. Jody said,
I can't believe how much she looks like you.
And Mrs. Chamberlain said, you should see our baby pictures side by side. Across from Kelly, Briar said to no one,
my tummy doesn't like that.
Twice during dinner, Kelly had squeezed Amira's knee, but she hadn't known what he was saying by it. They were still too new. Was he mad that she hadn't filled him in on how she'd said they met? The lie she completely forgot that she'd told? Did he think Mrs. Chamberlain was lying when she said they'd met on the train to cover up that awful night altogether? Was that why he was being so rude about her job and her book? And why would Mrs. Chamberlain tell her it was a history book when it obviously fucking wasn't? When Mrs. Chamberlain ran out the door on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, Amira imagined her going to the library and laying out big, dusty reference books and post-it notes, and maybe even using a magnifying glass. But a book about letter writing? Like, calligraphy and shit. It sounded like the kind of book you saw in the sales section at Barnes & Noble, or in the waiting line when you were shopping at Michael's. But Amira couldn't wrap her head around this, or the impossible fact that Kelly and Mrs. Chamberlain had once dated each other, let alone known each other out of the context of Amira, because sitting to her right, Tamra began to relentlessly ask questions about Amira's plans for her career and for the rest of her life. So, you went to Temple, Tamra said. Uh-huh. And then you took some typing classes. Yeah, that's my other job. Well, if you're thinking of grad school, it's actually not too late to apply for next fall. Had someone told Tamra that Amira wanted to go to grad school? Because no one had told Amira. She'd gone to undergraduate school to figure out what she wanted to do. Wasn't graduate school for the students who had succeeded? Amira's eyes went from Briar, who had turned strangely quiet, to Prudence, who was squeezing the sides of Imani's face. Imani was giggling in awe at Prudence, the way Amira would have when she was little, when she was still quite bemused by what white girls got away with. Jody was saying, "Would you like it if I did that to your face?" And Prudence was saying, "Yes, I would." "What was your GPA at Temple?" Tamra asked. "Oh, not awesome," Amira said. She set her fork and knife at the side of her plate. "Like, 3.1?
Okay.
Tamra nodded slowly. "So grad school may be out, but you know what, Amira? There are plenty of other options that will surprise you. In fact, my sister-in-law went to a certificate program for hotel management, and now she has a 5-bedroom house and makes 6 figures in Sacramento. Can you believe that?" Briar hiccuped once, and her cheeks turned red. "Yeah, that's crazy," Amira said. She wiped her hands on the napkin in her lap and said across the table, "Is Briar okay?" But Mrs. Chamberlain was passing Catherine to Jody, and they were trying to get her to say hi once again. On the other side of Amira, Walter, Kelly, and Peter were discussing the new Penn State football coach and his 6-year contract. And as Briar's stare became more glazed and far away, Amira began to feel the way she had on the night she and Briar went to Market Depot, very much together, but also brutally alone. Amira said, "B, are you okay?" Briar tapped her mother's arm.
"I want Mama," she said.
"Mama's talking. Bri, I still see carrots on your plate."
Mrs. Chamberlain turned back to Catherine and said, "Come on, sweetheart, can you say hi?" Tamra leaned over even closer to Amira.
"I don't know if you know this, but Alix has a lot of pull. So does Peter, in fact."
She reached over with long fingers and laid them on Amira's arm.
"They love you," she said. "I'm sure they would help you get into any program you wanted, or change up your schedule to fit in an internship, or classes, or whatever you were looking to get into. How old are you, honey?"
Briar hiccuped again. Amira said, "I'm 25.
"Okay, we gotta hustle, don't we? What's the big goal for you?"
Amira readjusted in her seat. She took the clasp of her necklace from the space above her sternum and returned it to its place behind her neck.
"I'm not really sure."
"Come on now," Tamra pressed.
Across the table, Briar's face looked like she was both falling asleep and ready to panic.
"If you could wake up tomorrow," Tamra said, "and do anything you wanted, what would that something be?"
Next to Amira, Walter said,
"He's gonna have to do better than that for a championship."
Rachel looked at Catherine and said,
"Hi, Mini-Alix."
Jody shushed Prudence and said,
"Prudence, that's 2.
And Amira realized that if she'd answered Tamra's question truthfully, no one would have heard her. She could have placed a sweet hand underneath her chin and said,
If I had a big goal, do you really think I'd be sitting at this fucking table right now?
But just then, Briar started to gag, and when Amira grabbed what she knew was a very expensive napkin and dove across the table to cover the toddler's mouth, Jody was the first to notice and scream.
17.
Years ago, in Alex Murphy's teenage bedroom, with the door closed, Kelly did all of these things he'd clearly been told to do by an older brother or a more experienced friend. But this obvious instruction didn't take away from the wildly flattering fact that he was doing these things to her. Kelly made a grand presentation of a recently purchased condom. He asked her if it hurt and if she was okay. He even asked if they should put down a towel since her bedspread was so nice. The whole thing lasted about two songs, A Long December and Colorblind. But Alex had been so taken with Kelly that she breathed a sigh of relief and gratitude. No matter what happens, she told herself, I'll never mind remembering this. It wasn't like she thought they'd marry, but the infatuation was dangerous and heavy. Now, in the comfort of her adult home, it seemed that the infatuation had never really ended. Alix couldn't tell if it had started up again, or if it had only become dormant by means of time and space. Alix watched Jody put her hands to her mouth. Amira's body was soaring across the table, both in slow motion and also with a quickness that made Alix jump in her seat. Even slower was Kelly's rise as he stood up from the table and swung his arm around Amira's waist, inches above pots of almost-gone butternut squash and a platter of lukewarm dark meat. In the shuffle, Alix couldn't properly collect the fact that her child was throwing up at the dinner table. She could only stare at the same hand that used to hold the underside of her jaw after varsity games and co-ed scrimmages. It had only been a few months, but at one time in her life, Kelly made Alix so wonderfully nervous, and he used his hands to steady her. Hey, hey, hey. He'd once said this outside the girls' locker room. You gotta be still and let me like you a little bit. And now his hands were wrapped around Amira, in Alix's house on Thanksgiving Day. Alix had the sudden urge to remove Kelly's hands from Amira's hips, and not just because of the sexual familiarity that they displayed. In the same funny muscle memory that makes you take out your Metro card to open your front door or call your third grade teacher mom, Alix found herself ready to slap Kelly's wrists away from her sitter. In the same voice and motion she used almost every day, she felt herself almost say, no, 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 don't touch, that's Mama's. Jody squeezed Alix's arm so hard that it was clear that it wasn't the first time. Alix was suddenly back in the room as Briar started to cry. For a moment, when Jody said, Alix, honey, grab your girl, Alix thought she was referring to Amira. 18. Briar's face pinched together underneath the vomit-filled napkin, and it reminded Amira that the little girl rarely cried. Amira's heart raced from diving over the table, from almost falling on top of it until Kelly caught her in his massive hands, and then from seeing a tiny face at the other side begin to moan in shock and discomfiture. Amira cupped the vomit in the napkin and brought it from Briar's chin upward past her nose. With nothing in front of her face, the three-year-old began to scream. Tamra said, oh no. And Peter ran to get a towel, and Prudence said, ew. And Rachel laughed. Party foul. Mrs. Chamberlain finally blinked. Oh God. She went to pick Briar up, but Amira stopped her. Actually, can you just unbuckle her? I'll grab her. Amira said this with such urgency that Mrs. Chamberlain obeyed. Amira said, B, stand up for me. And she swung the toddler into her arms, Briar's face dripping with snot and tears. Mrs. Chamberlain said, oh, no, Amira, you don't have to do that. No, it's okay, I got her.
Amira ascended the stairs and passed Peter and a bartender carrying paper towels and cleaning bottles in their hands. When she made it to the kitchen, she heard Walter say, "That was incredible." In the upstairs bathroom, Amira sat Briar down on the toilet seat and closed the door behind her. Briar did that nervous and uneven breathing Amira saw other children do when they skinned their knees or popped their balloons. It was alarming to know that this type of crying had been inside Briar all along, that she'd always been capable of it and just chosen not to. "Hey." Amira took a washcloth and began to wet it with warm water from the sink. "Hey, Mama, it's okay. Look at me." She wiped Briar's mouth and neck as Briar gasped for air so hard her whole body trembled every few seconds. "I'm sorry, big girl. That's no fun to throw up. But hey, I think I caught it all. Your dress is still clean." Briar started to whimper as she touched her dress at the hem.
"This is itchy," she said.
"Yeah." Amira took Briar's fingers and wiped each one down with the towel. "This dress isn't really my favorite either.
I don't like..."
Briar calmed herself enough to point at the ceiling with her free hand and say,
"I don't like when Catherine B's the favorite."
Amira stopped. She hung the washcloth on the side of the sink and sat back on her heels. "What did you say?"
I don't like when Catherine B's the littlest favorite to Mama. I don't like that."
Briar had stopped crying, and she said this with a calm and specific certainty, both that she had explained it correctly and that this was in fact how she felt. Amira pressed her lips together. "B, you know what?" As she formulated her words, Amira held Briar's knees in both of her hands and thought, "This is the littlest your knees will ever be. You can have favorite ice cream or favorite cereal. But guess what? When you have a family, everyone is the same. Do you have a family?" Briar put her fingers in her mouth.
"Yes."
"Do you have a mama?"
"Yes."
"And a dada?"
"Yes."
"And a sister?"
"Yes."
"Exactly. That's your family. And in families, everyone is always the same." Briar touched her shoulders.
"How come?"
"Well, in Amira's family, Justine was so obviously the favorite, but Amira was her brother's favorite, and so it seemed to even out. Her mother favored Alfie when it came to Christmas gifts, and her father favored Amira when it came to birthdays and phone calls. Amira didn't figure this out until high school, but Briar was doing so at the tender age of 3. Amira looked at the little person on the toilet and felt as if she were pushing an enormous boat out into the ocean. She slumped as if the situation were completely out of her hands and said, "'Cause that's what family means. Family means no favorites." Mr. Chamberlain knocked twice, and the cracked door swung open. When Briar saw her father, she frowned and said, "Hi." By the time Amira came back downstairs, the bartenders were clearing away plates, and everyone was gathering in the living room for dessert. Kelly made a very theatrical show of putting his own plate into the sink upstairs and helping the 2 hired women push the dining room chairs back underneath the table. A few bites into a sugary strawberry rhubarb pie, Prudence began to have a breakdown about needing more whipped cream. This marked the 3rd time, in Amira's opinion, that Prudence had reached number 3. Cleo started to cry as well, and then Rachel stood to slip on her jacket. Rachel explained that she was meeting a man friend in town and would be back in a few hours. She tapped Briar on the nose and said,
"I'm off like a prom dress,"
before heading for the door. Amira took the moment to squeeze Kelly's arm. "We should probably get going, too." After awkward and stunted goodbyes inside the Chamberlain house, Amira had all those feelings of leaving a movie theater and realizing that it was dark outside and that it had been for some time. The snow crunched underneath her feet as she stood next to Kelly and waited for their Uber. In a pink t-shirt and white bedtime leggings, Briar waved from Peter's arms at the top of the stoop. Emira waved back and mouthed, "Bye, Pickle." Inside the Uber, Kelly and Emira didn't speak. Kelly stared out the window and rubbed his chin. As the silence settled in, Kelly started to remind Emira of the type of person on the train who cussed out loud when there was a delay. There was always that one passenger who seemed to believe that the train had been delayed only for them, as if no one else was inconvenienced and late. And as time went on, they became angrier at the fact that they couldn't speak to a manager, rather than bothered by the delay itself. The car rolled along in the glittery snow, and for the first time since they'd been dating, Emira felt that Kelly was acting particularly white. Before they reached his apartment, Kelly told the cab driver that he could stop on the block before his street. He said to Emira, "I need one last drink," and reached to open the car door. Emira followed Kelly into the kind of bar that Shawnee would have been tickled by, particularly at 9 p.m. on Thanksgiving Day. There were three white men with gray and black beards seated in the center of the dimly lit bar, and a vacant pool table in a wood-paneled back room. One man was eating alone, chicken and something green, as he kept his eyes on the TV screen attached to the wall above the cash register. On the long wall opposite were pictures of John Wayne, Pennsylvania license plates, and other sepia-colored cowboys. Emira could hear low folk music, and just above it, a referee from the large television screen blowing a whistle and throwing a yellow flag. She took her coat off and hung it up next to a longhorn skull mounted on the wall. On top of a bar stool, Kelly ordered a beer. Emira declined. She wanted to go back to his apartment and back to Kelly's bed because the idea of laughing away the awkwardness of the evening still didn't seem completely far-fetched. It wasn't that Emira wasn't bothered by the night's disclosure, but she thought this as Kelly kicked one boot up on the footrest and kept the other balanced on the soiled floor. At the end of the day, what could she or anyone really do about the situation? High school was a long time ago, even for someone you've slept with. In college, when Emira learned that she'd once slept with her current boyfriend's new roommate, Shawnee had gasped and said, "What are you gonna do?" Emira had laughed and said, "Probably just keep living my life." Josepha had said, "Amen." So Emira stayed standing, which put them at eye level. A dynamic she loved. She put her hands behind her back and hooked her fingers together, knowing she had one shot to turn this night around. In an attempt that was dumb but still charmingly dad-like, Emira said, "At least the food was good." Kelly's face stayed the same. "Emira, I'm not trying to be dramatic, but there's no way you can keep working for Alex." Emira couldn't help but laugh. She waited for his face to break, but when it didn't, she placed her hands against the side of the bar. "Okay, Kelly, come on. Yeah, that was extremely awkward, and it's pretty weird and gross that you used to date my boss, but that was high school. You expect me to quit my job over it?" "This isn't just..." "Thank you, sorry." Kelly said this as the bartender dropped off his beer. Kelly reached back for his wallet. "This isn't just an ex-girlfriend. Alex Murphy is... She's more than just a loss of innocence moment. She's a bad person." "But I don't work for Alex Murphy." Emira took her purse off her shoulder and hung it on a hook underneath the bar. "I work for Mrs. Chamberlain, and you're acting like you guys still talk or something." The idea of Kelly still hung up on Mrs. Chamberlain was slightly entertaining. Mrs. Chamberlain, at her core, was such a mom. She said things like, "Look at Mama when I'm talking to you," and "Just one more bite, lovey." She bought nonfiction books and used the dust jacket as a bookmark. She ordered diapers in bulk, and when she thought she was alone, she put her headphones on and laughed out loud as she watched clips from The Ellen Show on her iPad. Emira could recognize the fact that Kelly and Mrs. Chamberlain were only a year apart in age, but not to the extent that it put them in the same league of parenthood. Kelly owned nice things, but owning a baby was next level. Emira tried to keep her voice even as she said, "I don't understand why you care so much." "I don't care so much. Okay, listen. Kelly sipped the top layer of his beer and bent his head lower to speak to her. Amira, the fact that Alex sent you to a grocery store with her kid at 11 p.m. makes a lot more sense now. You're not the first Black woman Alex has hired to work for her family, and you probably won't be the last.
Okay. Amira sat down. She didn't mean to sound flippant, but she doubted that Kelly could really tell her anything she didn't already know.
Amira had met several Mrs. Chamberlains before. They were all rich and overly nice and particularly lovely to the people who served them. Amira knew that Mrs. Chamberlain wanted a friendship, but she also knew that Mrs. Chamberlain would never display the same efforts of kindness with her friends as she did with Amira. Accidentally ordering two salads and offering one to Amira, or sending her home with a bag filled with frozen dinners and soups. It wasn't that Amira didn't understand the racially charged history that Kelly was alluding to, but she couldn't help but think that if she weren't working for this Mrs. Chamberlain, she'd probably be working for another one. Kelly laced his fingers in his lap.
I didn't tell you this before because, I don't know, we were just dating, and I didn't want you to think I was trying to be woke or whatever, but in high school, Alex used to live in a legit mansion. It was insane. Some shitty stuff happened where she wrote me a letter that got into the wrong hands, and this group of kids found out about where she lived. They tried to go swimming at her house because it was honestly a country club, but Alex called the cops, and this Black kid named Robbie, who I'm still friends with, ended up getting arrested. He lost his scholarship. He had to go to community college for a year. She completely altered the course of his life.
Amira bit the side of her nail. You were there when this happened?
Yeah, we were dating. Until this went down, Kelly said. I told her not to call the police. Like, come on, a bunch of Black kids on the property and a white girl calls the cops? It was obvious what would happen. But she tried to make it seem like she was protecting the Black housekeeper her family employed.
Kelly stopped and took another sip of his beer. She acted like she was so embarrassed of her wealth, but now she's still living the same way she did then, and she's still hiring Black women to take care of her family. And I was an idiot at the time. I thought like, oh, sweet, your house has a movie theater and this woman makes you whatever dinner you want. But looking back, it was super creepy. Alex hung all over this woman and acted like they were best friends. This woman even did her hair before school. Alex completely gets off on either having Black people work for her or calling the cops on them. I can't. Amira, you can't be one of her people. Amira crossed her legs.
Kelly, I don't know what to say. It's a job. Briar hangs on me all the time, and I comb her hair every time I see her.
Alex was a senior in high school. She wasn't a baby.
But I don't know. I know it's weird, she tried to explain. But people do pay other people to act like part of the family. That doesn't mean it's not a transaction.
Amira, this was different. The woman who worked for them, they made her wear a uniform. At first, I just thought she wore the same polo a lot. But then I saw that it said Murphy on it, and I was like, Amira couldn't keep it in. When Kelly said the word polo, she dropped her eyes. She let out a sound that was very Mrs. Chamberlain-like in pitch, and it sounded like a very curious, huh. Wait. Kelly lifted his hands and rested his palms at the base of his hairline. He looked like he was watching the end of a very close game. Amira, he said, don't tell me she makes you wear a uniform. Amira looked up at the water-stained ceiling. She raised her shoulders and said,
well, she doesn't make me do anything.
God damn it, Amira!
Amira gripped the sides of her chair and looked at the other end of the bar. Out of everything that had happened that evening, this reaction stunned Amira the most. She wanted to shake him and say, no, no, no. You're Kelly, remember? You think videos of dogs who can't catch anything are hilarious.
You take pictures of mirrors you see on the street and send them to me with the caption, "Hey, a mirror." You still put a glass of water by my side of the bed, even though I've never drunk from it. Not even once. But here he was, behaving as if they were alone in the type of bar that Kelly should have checked in with her about before sitting and ordering a drink.
"You need to calm the fuck down," she hissed.
"You have to quit," he said. "You have to. You cannot work there."
Holy shit, how did this happen?
"Okay. I'm a babysitter." Amira scooted up on her seat to speak closer to him, hoping to lower his volume with her private proximity.
"I wear a different shirt at work because we paint and color and go to the park and shit. It's just so I don't get my clothes messy. That's it. This is nothing like the house you went to in high school."
"Oh, right." Kelly had a childish glare when he asked, "So have you ever not worn it?" Amira closed her mouth. "Do the shirts say your name on them or hers?" In a small voice, Amira said,
"I feel like you're being kind of a dick right now."
"This is not okay." Kelly hit his fingers against the bar top on "not" and "okay." The brown liquid in his glass trembled twice. "This isn't me having some unresolved high school crush or grudge. Alex does this. She uses black employees as an excuse for her own actions. Not only is she a bad person, but it's infuriating because you're incredible with children. You should get to wear your own clothes with people who deserve you. And I know I said I'd drop it, but I swear to God, if you released that video from the grocery store, Kelly, back up." Amira said his name the way she said Briar's when the little girl wanted to open the trash can and look, just for a second. "Now you want to use this video to shame Mrs. Chamberlain? Alex shouldn't be able to get away with this shit. And you would probably get nanny offers from the richest families in Philadelphia." "Cool. That would literally only make you happy. You do realize they'd pay me the same. Then tell me what I need to do. Kelly, oh my God. If it's money or a job or if you need to live with me for a bit, whatever." He listed these options on his fingers. "Tell me what I need to say to get you to leave."
"I feel like leaving this fucking bar right now."
Amira grabbed her purse. "Amira, don't." Her heels clicked as she went for her coat. Amira heard Kelly's stool move as he did, and then his voice behind her. Wait, talk to me. She opened the door to the bar vestibule, much like the one at the front of the Chamberlain house, but this one was dark and smelled like stale smoke and sweaty shoes. The door outside was heavy and cold as she pushed herself into it. A gust of wind and snow fought her from the other side, and the door closed shut against her shoulder. Amira said, "Fuck." The door behind Kelly closed, and then it was just the two of them in this tiny space. "Hey." He held two fingers to the bridge of his nose as if he were checking it for a break. "Hear me out here. I don't want to fight. All I'm saying is that you should—"
"Okay, first of all," Amira turned to him.
She threw her coat over her arm and held it close.
"You don't get to tell me where I should and shouldn't work. You literally have a cafeteria in your office. You wear t-shirts to work, and you have a doorman, Kelly, okay? So you can 1,000% go fuck yourself. The fact that you think you're better than Alix or Alex or whatever is a joke. You will never have to even consider working somewhere that requires a uniform, so you can chill the fuck out about how I choose to make my living. And second of all, you were so fucking rude in there, at a Thanksgiving dinner."
Kelly leaned up against the wall behind him and closed his mouth. Amira wasn't finished, and she felt she was finding her thoughts and recollection of the evening as the words and cold found her body.
"You're not better than anyone," she said. "When you hang up your own coat and take your plate to the trash. I've been those girls helping out tonight. I fucking am those girls helping out tonight. And you're not making anything easier by giving them less to do. It's like eating everything on your plate because you think someone else won't go hungry if you don't. You're not helping anyone but yourself. But that's not even the half of it. You're not seeing the whole situation for what it is. Of course I want a new job. I'd love to make real money and not have spit up on all my clothes. But I can't,
Amira thought. Oh, God. She did what Shawnee called the ugly cry lip and looked down to her boots. The toes were wet from melted snow.
I can't just fucking leave her, she said.
Kelly closed his eyes for a full 2 seconds, as if he'd been punched in the stomach and had also seen it coming.
For 21 hours a week, Briar gets to matter to someone, and you want me to just pick up and leave? When would I ever see her if... It's not that simple.
Her voice cracked again. Amira shook her head and crossed one knee over the other. They stood there like that for what seemed like a long time. I messed up, Kelly said. I wasn't trying to. Even though it's exactly what I did, I'm not trying. Amira, look at me. I'm more than just like you. With her coat pressed into her gut, Amira stood frozen against the door and felt her heart beat into it. She said, okay. Kelly pressed his lips together. He stuck his hands in his pockets and bent slightly to meet her eyes. Do you get what I mean by that? Amira nodded and looked back to her shoes. She wiped her eye with her pinky finger, looked up, and said, fuck. An hour later, Amira sat in Kelly's bed. In the living room, Kelly Skyped with his family in Florida, and she listened to the way his voice changed from parents to siblings to grandparents to nephew, and then to a very old dog who wandered into frame. Amira grabbed her phone and texted a list to herself. When she heard Kelly say goodbye, she walked with the lit-up screen into the living room. It was dark, and the snow sent spots from outside the window over her bare feet. I have things to say. Kelly closed his laptop and swiveled his chair to face her. Amira stood pantless and held her phone in both hands. I know I have to quit, she said. I know that I can't stay there and that raising Briar isn't my job. But I just need to do it on my own terms. I turn 26 next week. Amira grinned sadly. And I'm gonna be kicked off my parents' health insurance. I've known for a while that this wasn't exactly sustainable, but I need to figure it out on my own. I completely understand, he said. And I didn't forget your birthday. I'm not done yet. Amira stopped him. She looked back to her phone. Number two, you gotta stop bringing up that tape from Market Depot. Kelly placed his elbows on the desk behind him. Like, I get it, Amira said. You have a weirdly large amount of black friends. You saw Kendrick Lamar in concert, and now you have a black girlfriend. Great. But I need you to get that, like, being angry and yelling in a store means something different for me than it would for you, even though I was in the right. And I get that you want to stick it to Mrs. Chamberlain or whatever to avenge your high school friend, but her life wouldn't change at all. Mine would. And I don't want anyone seeing it, especially as I start to look for a job. Kelly nodded in long, slow dips. Okay. I don't exactly agree, he warned. I remember that night very well, and I really thought you kept your cool much more than anyone would expect. But I also respect that, and I won't bring it up again. You promise? I promise. Okay. And last thing, Amira put a hand to her neck. You can't take me to bars like that anymore. Kelly squinted. Then he tipped his head back, and she watched him appear to realize what he'd done and why she was bringing it up now.
Okay, that was another mistake. But if it makes a difference, I've been there twice before, and I wouldn't have taken you somewhere uncomfortable on purpose.
Well, yeah, but that's the point. You think it's comfortable because it's always been that way for you.
Amira and Kelly talked about race very little because it always seemed like they were doing it already. When she really considered a life with him, a real life, a joint bank account emergency contact both names on the lease life, Amira almost wanted to roll her eyes and ask, "Are we really gonna do this? How are you gonna tell your parents? If I'd walked in here when they were still on the screen, how would you have introduced me? Are you gonna take our son to get his hair done? Who's gonna teach him that it doesn't matter what his friends do, that he can't stand too close to white women when he's on the train or in an elevator, that he should slowly and noticeably put his keys on the roof as soon as he gets pulled over? Or that there are times our daughter should stand up for herself and times to pretend it was a joke that she didn't quite catch? Or that when white people compliment her, she's so professional, she's always on time. It doesn't always feel good because sometimes people are going to be surprised by the fact that she showed up rather than the fact that she had something to say when she did."
"I don't know," Amira struggled. "Let me try to say this. You get real fired up when we talk about that night at Market Depot. But I don't need you to be mad that it happened. I need you to be mad that it just, like, happens. I'm also not asking you to boycott places or anything. Mrs. Chamberlain makes a big deal about not going to Market Depot anymore, and it's like, okay. The other stores are mad far, but it's your life. But it's the same thing for you. Like, I don't want you to change your life because of me. If you want to go to that bar without me, whatever. Just try to remember that we have different experiences. John Wayne said a lot of fucked up shit, and I'd rather not stare at his face while I have a drink."
Kelly poked his lips out in a way that let her know he wouldn't forget.
"I can be better about that."
"Okay.
Can I also just say," Kelly added, "I wasn't trying to act like you can't get a new job on your own. I know you can."
"I know. Well, we'll see. Maybe I will need your help in case Mrs. Chamberlain fires me or whatever."
Amira shook her head and clicked her phone to dark.
"Which she better not. I'm babysitting every day next week because she'll be out of town till Friday, and I need that money like yesterday."
"Amira, if I know anything about Alex, it's that she definitely won't fire you."
"She might if she's as bothered by us dating as you were."
"No way," Kelly said. "She would never fire you because it would say more about her than it would about you. Not to mention, now she knows there's a video of you being mistreated because of where she sent you."
"Kelly, she sent me there about 100 times. It may have even been my idea. I'm sorry, but I think you're the only one who sees it that way."
"Okay, fine. But listen, I obviously think you should start looking in the new year. But for now, your job is safe. If I were you, I'd take the money and show that kid a really good time before you leave."
Amira crossed her arms over her chest and stared at the floor. She pictured Briar hiccuping with each breath and the way she always pointed to the ceiling when she was about to say something true. Amira pointed her toe on the dark wood floor and said,
"That's an interesting way of looking at it."
Kelly swiveled his chair from left to right for a moment.
"Do you want to talk about what I said to you in the bar?"
Amira bit her bottom lip. Kelly made her feel both extremely grown up and consumed with infantile reactions. Her heart could barely handle him remembering her birthday. She wasn't going to touch the L word today.
Nope, she smiled. "I had three things on my list, so
I'm good.
19. On Friday morning, Alix woke up before her husband. There was a part of her that marveled that he was still there, in their bed, in their home, as if the previous night's rift of turbulent envy could have deleted Peter from the equation that was her life. But there he was, very asleep, his face unknowing as it grazed the inside of his armpit. Alix rolled over and stared at her night table piled with books, her iPad, a gold lamp, and a picture of Briar and Catherine in bathing suits, eating watermelon with their hands. Catherine was in a yellow one-piece, but she was too little to sit up on her own, so Peter's arms were holding her up, his biceps cut off by the frame. Alix's children looked unbelievably small and innocent, pictured above her resting iPad, particularly because the night before, after her family was asleep, Alix had taken the tablet into the bathroom where she stayed for 2 hours to search, scroll, and stare at any image of Kelly Copeland she could find. His Facebook, his Instagram, his LinkedIn, his workplace. When Alix discovered he didn't have a Twitter account, she crept back out to her bedroom to retrieve her phone so she could thumb through Venmo and try to find his transactions. Alix could remember when Facebook came out with a photo feature. It was 2005, and that was probably the last time she'd gone this hard. But 10 years later, there was much to behold. Despite what he'd said to her when he'd stepped into her home, it was Kelly who hadn't changed a bit. Between pictures from European trips and holiday parties, Alix located all of Kelly's ex-girlfriends, and surprise, surprise, none of them were white. Alix wasn't sure if any of them identified as black. One of them had a black father, but this was all she could confirm. However, they were all ethnically ambiguous looking, with names like Tierra and Christina, Jasmine and Gabby. They had light brown skin and curly dark hair, or dramatic widow's peaks and Spanish last names. They went to Black Lives Matter marches and worked for nonprofit startups. They did skincare tutorials on Instagram with quirky music in the background. All of Kelly's exes started their days with intricate smoothie recipes. Alix thought, is this a thing? And Alix dug deep enough to see that Kelly had referred to two of them as queens. Once in 2014, this queen, and once in 2012, hey queen. Of course, Kelly was excited to now be dating Amira. But these girls were different than Amira. They had big passions and light brown skin and punchy, colorful blogs with punny titles. They had decent jobs and vacation photos, and one had a few thousand Instagram followers. If Kelly had left these women in the same way he'd left Alix, ruining her reputation, choosing strangers over her, publicly breaking up with her with a horribly pretentious line, they had obviously and easily bounced back. But Amira was different. Alix couldn't quite explain it, but Amira was different in the same way Claudette had been different. They were extremely special people, and while no one deserved poor treatment, they deserved it even less. Back in high school, Kelly wanted status, and at Alix's expense, that's what he'd got. But what did Kelly think he was getting from Amira? How many times had he proudly told the story of how they met, acting performatively flustered and suggesting that he shouldn't have? As she sat on the ledge of her bathtub, Alix's iPad became so warm that it started to burn her legs. Alix reached to the side of the tub and picked up her phone. She texted the girls that she wanted to meet at 10 a.m., not 11. She took her iPad and went to the restaurant's website, moving their reservation up 1 hour. I'm furious. Alix slumped. Across the table and over plates filled with brunch specials, Jody held her coffee in both hands. To Alix's left, Rachel broke a yolk open and it ran onto a bed of greens. To her right, Tamara salted her eggs, but she kept her eyes raised and focused on Alix. I hate that I'm completely shocked, Alix said, and that I'm not surprised. Tamara laughed bitterly as she set the salt shaker down. This all makes a whole lot more sense now. I knew there was something off about him.
Alix, don't be mad at me, Jody said carefully. But I'm having a hard time understanding. If anyone did what he did to me, telling awful kids where I live and putting people I love at risk, I would be furious too. But you're also saying that he's the opposite of racist? That he likes black people too much?
Alix is saying, Tamara stepped in, that Kelly is one of those white guys who not only goes out of his way to date black women, but only wants to date black women. With kale in her cheek, Rachel chewed and said, "That's racist." It completely fetishizes black people in a terrible way, Tamara went on. It makes it seem like we're all the same, as if we can't contain multitudes of personalities and traits and differences. And people like that think that it says something good about them, that they're so brave and unique that they would even dare to date black women, like they're some kind of martyr. Alix nodded so vigorously that the table lightly shook. This is what he does, she said. In high school, it was the black athletes. According to his Facebook, it's now black women. And if he's still surrounding himself with black people just so he can feel good about himself, I couldn't care less. But now, Amira is on the other side of it, and this doesn't even touch on what he did to me back then.
Okay, I get it now. No wonder you were so upset last night. Jody cut into her hash browns. Here I was thinking you still carried a flame for him, which I wouldn't judge you for either. But this takes it to a whole new level.
No, it's nothing like that. God, no, Alix said. For the record, this has nothing to do with me dating Kelly Copeland.
She said his name as if it were a myth or fickle philosophy, something to put air quotes around. But I do care about my sitter. This guy completely ruined my high school experience, and I don't trust him as far as I can spit. And I know people change, but when he showed up yesterday, I don't know. At first I thought, how are you here? And then I thought, what do you want with my sitter?
Jody placed a hand to her cheek. Rachel looked up from her plate and said, I just got chills.
Tamara removed a bag of mint tea from her mug. This is not good.
It makes my skin crawl, Alix said, and I can only imagine what he's told her about me.
I'm playing devil's advocate here.
It was clear Jody still didn't completely understand, but Alix appreciated her dedication to the topic at hand.
But is there a chance that while he may have a fetish, that fetish may have grown into something more serious? People do change, right? And call me crazy, but it seemed like he really liked her.
This observation made Alix's ears burn.
Well, there are plenty of misogynists out there who are obsessed with a certain type of woman, Tamara said. Despite the fact that they use women to validate themselves, they think they aren't sexist because they love to objectify women so much. And you're right, people do change, but it's not like he was 12.
But even so, what can we do about it?
Rachel, as usual, bent the conversation into another direction.
Because, think about it, how difficult is it to tell someone, hey, your boyfriend likes you for the wrong reasons? If someone told me that, I'd be like, no, he doesn't. Mind your business. It's not like Alix can tell her to not be with him.
Then Rachel added this as if it were an unfortunate fact.
Amira is a grown woman.
But she's not, though.
This outburst surprised Alix as much as it seemed to surprise her friends. Her face suddenly felt hot as she remembered Kelly's hands on Amira's backside, the text he'd sent her. Is basketball something you'd be interested in? The way he'd turned to her when the video was mentioned. That's Amira's property now. Amira is still so young, she said. And with this, Alix felt her eyes begin to water. When she let her voice crack to say, "What the fuck is he doing with her?" a tear dropped into her napkin. The idea of Kelly truly having feelings for Amira seemed slightly worse than him using her for his own gain. Just the thought of it put a sharp buzzing sound into her head. Alix also realized that sitting here at brunch with her girlfriends, with a legitimate excuse to discuss Kelly Copeland, might have been the happiest she'd felt since she moved to Philadelphia. Tamara put her napkin at the side of her plate and touched Alix's back. "Let's go outside," she said. She scooted her chair back. "Come on, let's get some fresh air." Out front were a dozen or so Philadelphians in down parkas and boots, bouncing with their hands in pockets as they waited for their names to be called. It reminded Alix of New York, and she thought, "One more day and you'll be there." She and Tamara walked down the street and stood underneath a drippy bridge passover. Snow and ice dropped down and collected in puddles on the asphalt. Tamara's boots echoed as they hit the concrete. "I'm sorry, I'm okay, I'm fine." A breeze whipped Alix's hair into her mouth, and she pulled it out with two fingers. "I'm just scared for her. He was a bad guy back then, and now that we're older, I don't trust him even more." "Then I think you need to tell her," Tamara said. "Don't tell her about what he did to you, because that needs to stay separate. And if you tell her about the letter and that night, the rest of it will come out like you're still trying to punish him. But tell her what you know about his dating record, and that he's been like this for some time. Just be honest with her and say, 'If it were me, I'd want to know.' Would you want to know?" Alix felt certain that Tamara knew what she meant by this question. That as her closest friend, her word already carried a massive amount of weight. But as a Black woman in this scenario, Tamara's outlook would dictate the moves Alix made next. Tamara twisted her lips to the side. "I think this is less about what I would want to know, and more about if Amira should know. And Alix," Tamara shook her head. She breathed deep, as if she'd just climbed a ladder to a rewarding rooftop view. "I think you're the best thing that ever happened to that girl. You should step into her life in any way you can." Alix stuck her hands into both of her front pockets. "What do you mean?" "Well," Tamara stood with a face that seemed to be asking, "do you want the good news first or the bad news?" She zipped up her jacket high against her neck. "I like Amira, a lot. I actually think it's quite lovely how she and Briar compliment each other. It's incredibly sweet to watch." For a moment, Alix couldn't tell if this was a slight to Amira, Briar, or both. "But," Tamara said slowly, "that girl is very lost. She's 25 years old, and she has no idea what she wants or how to get it. She doesn't have the motivation to maintain a real career the way our girls will have, which is probably not her fault, but it doesn't make it less true. What I'm saying is, there are a lot of jerks like Kelly out there, but when they get hold of girls like Amira, someone who's still trying to figure herself out, that's when I start to really worry. And the more that I think about it, it makes a lot of sense she ended up with a guy like this. He's looking to validate himself through someone else. She hasn't caught on because she doesn't know who she is." Alix shook her head and brought a hand up to her face. Her voice split again as she asked, "What am I gonna do?" The tears came so easily that through her sobs, Alix thought, "Thank God." It felt like Amira really was hers, and that Alix's intentions must be good after all. "Sweetie, hey," Tamara hugged her from the side. Look at me. This will be fine. It's only been a few months, and there's no ring on her finger. Amira is so lucky to have you worrying about her. But you gotta take care of yourself, too. Oh, I'm fine, though. I'm fine. Alix took a tissue out of her pocket and swiped it underneath her nose. Alix, I'm gonna say something to you, and I don't want you to take this the wrong way. Tamara stepped in front of her and held her elbows. When you were in New York, you were go, go, go all the time. You can't expect to feel like yourself when things have slowed down as much as they have. Alix looked back to the awning of the restaurant as her eyes filled with tears again. She both hated and loved Tamara for bringing her lack of fulfillment into a harsh light. But what am I supposed to do? Her voice went into a tragic falsetto, and she took her volume down even lower. Peter is so supportive, and the fact is, I do work from home. I thought the Clinton campaign would want me more, but this event next week is the only event I've had in months. I used to have my team, and my phone used to be blowing up all the time. And I know it's because I had a baby, I know. And I'm so glad because she's so perfect. But now I don't even know how to begin to have the same life I had while I'm living here. Tamara pulled out her